verse 2. And it says, in verse 1, it says, Moshe's heir said, that they will not trust in me and they will not listen to me, because they will say that God did not appear to you. And God said to him, what is that in your hand? And he said, a stick. So when it says, mazeh, what is that? The word mazeh really should be two words, ma and zeh. In the pasuk, it's written as one word, mem zayin hey, mazeh. So Rashi says there's something called a kri and a ksiv. Okay, kri is sometimes you read something, but it's written a different way. The reason why it's written a different way than the way it's read is one is the simple explanation, and one is there to go a different type of interpretation, like a midrashic interpretation. So Rashi says, Mem Zayin Hei means, instead of Maze, it's Mize, from that which is in your hands, you will get punished, because you Choshed B'Ksherim. Choshed B'Ksherim means that when you see an innocent person and you condemn him, that he did the wrong thing. Okay? The example that they give is, like, for instance, let's say somebody walks into a store, looks around, doesn't see anybody, picks up a package that's on the counter and walks out. Okay? So the person looks like he's stealing. But it could be, there is the possibility that he really bought it and he forgot it, or he left it there for a short amount of time, came and looked around to see if the owner was there to tell him he's taking it, and he didn't see the owner, so he was in a rush, he couldn't wait for the owner, so he took it himself. That's also a logical possibility. So therefore, you should try to judge a person in the light of innocence and not in such a light that you look and then condemn him for the wrong thing, when there are two possibilities. Okay? Now we ask the question, what's the difference between that and Lashon Hara? Lashon Hara is, I choose negative reasons. I see an act and I tell you over the act, and then I explain it in such a way that it's negative. Lashon Hara is where you give the wrong reason. So what's the difference between suspicion of an innocent person and talking Lashon Hara, gossip? What is the difference? Because it seems to be they're similar. Okay? So the question is, what is the difference between the two? I'd like to ask another question on Choshed B'Ksherim, where you suspect an innocent person. If you study human nature and how people act, okay, is it that people are good, or most of the times people are evil? And so the question is, when we say good or evil, what do we mean, that everybody by nature is evil? Well, what does that mean? Because sometimes you see people do nice things, and not everybody is a Nazi. So the question is, what do we mean that by nature people are evil? Okay? The way the basic emotions work is that a person, the basic drives of the human being, from what I could see, is basically sex and aggression in most human beings. But however, a person has guilt, has a conscience. The conscience, the tools of the conscience is fear, shame, and guilt. Okay? So let's say, for instance, I have a desire to steal. But what stops me is I have a fear of getting caught. Which means that I don't see stealing as evil. What I see as evil is getting caught, but not the stealing. You see? So therefore, most people do not think stealing is evil. They're afraid of getting caught. You see? Okay, if that is true, evil, in other words, so therefore a person, that type of person, in other words, insofar as his actions are concerned, he might do correct things, but insofar as his nature is concerned, he is evil. What I mean is that if he could bypass his fear, shame, or guilt, then he'd be able to steal. He'd be able to steal if he could bypass his conscience. Right? Let's say he knew he would not get caught. Or if they would catch him, they would not punish him. It's such a small sin, they would not punish him. So then he would definitely do it. So you see that he is evil by nature. He's not a Nazi, but you see his nature is to be evil. And the question is the fact that you're doing the act is evil. If you're not doing the act, it's not evil. When we say that the human being, his nature is to be evil, it's true. Your guilt or your shame or your fear might stop you from doing the act, but your basic nature is that it's not wrong. In other words, when you cheat on a test, you're not afraid. You don't hold that cheating is evil. You're only afraid of getting caught. But when you're a discipline problem, you're not afraid of... You don't hold that it's wrong to disturb the class. You're afraid of the punishment. You see? So therefore, it shows that the nature of the person is evil. It's not looking at it from the act, but it's looking at it from the nature of the human being. Therefore, to really become just, the way to become just is that a person has to study the ideas of justice and why it is a benefit to be justice for society and for yourself, that there is a benefit, and then when you see it, then you really start living the life of justice, and it comes in line with your mind that, yeah, that's the best life for me, and therefore I should not be evil, you see? But that's working it through in your mind. Before you work it through in your mind, the basic nature of a human being is to be evil. Now, so I want to, based on this, I'd like to ask you a question. Let's say I get a new class, new freshman, September, beginning of this year, I get a new class, and they are all freshmen, they all come in. I never had any one of them before. Should I judge them before I know them, that look, maybe they're really a good class, and they will never cause a discipline problem, and I don't have to force them to do anything? Or should I come in with the assumption that they are teenagers, and if I act weak, they will take advantage of that weakness and destroy the class? Which possibility should I live by? So the question is, definitely, I should be prepared for the teenager for destroying the class, right? So the question is, why does the Torah tell me I should not be choshed, I should not be suspicious of an innocent when most people are not innocent, and I should be suspicious of them not being innocent? I should worry about that they're going to do the wrong act. That's reality. How could the Torah tell me to go against reality and think of a logical possibility why they will be good? You understand? It's telling me to go against human nature. To think against human nature. It'd be like the Torah is asking me to look at life foolishly and come into class and have the kids walk all over me before I change my mind. In other words, you're right. That what we're dealing with is where I'm prejudging you, and I don't know whether you will do the correct act or whether you did a correct, what your motive was in doing a certain act, whether it was correct or wrong, or prejudging you whether you will do the correct act or not. Now, based on human nature, I should assume you're doing the wrong act. And the Torah is telling me that I should always assume that you're doing the correct act if there's two possibilities. I'm saying that does not make sense because the Torah is telling me to look at people the opposite of human nature. So what some of our sages say, that where you are suspecting an innocent person, is where you know the person personally, and you know generally he does the right thing, and then he does an act which is suspicious, then you should look at the positive side. Okay? But that's only a person that you know that lives the just life. In other words, if somebody you don't know, definitely if the person does wrong, so then definitely you could be suspicious of the wrong. That's definitely. But when you don't know the person, so then you have to go by most people. Most people, they could get away with it. They would do the evil because their nature is evil. So therefore, I should be suspicious. Where should I judge a person for innocence? Where I should look at, where there's two possibilities and choose the innocent, only where the person lives the life of justice and truth. He lives the life of Torah and mitzvos, and I know that he always tries to keep it correctly. So then in that situation, I should judge where he doesn't act, where there's two possible interpretations, then I should interpret the innocent way. Okay? In other words, let's say, for instance, in a class, like once I know the students, basically I will know how far a student could go in a certain area. So if I'm in doubt in that area, so then if I see that he could do wrong in that area, so then I'll judge him, condemn him for doing the wrong thing. Look at it as a condemnation. If it's a person that he usually does the right thing, but in this case there's two possibilities, so then I might think of judging him for innocence. That's only after I know the person. If I don't know the person, I should go according to the majority. Most of the majority of people, the nature is evil, so then I have to assume that I have to protect myself from them doing me... I have the right to protect myself from them doing me harm. So therefore, Choshed B'Ksherim, okay, it's a situation where I could be hurt somehow, and I have to make a judgment call: should I protect myself, or should I shouldn't have to. I don't have to protect myself because the guy is innocent. It's a judgment call, you see. And that judgment call is, I see, by knowing the human being, I make that decision. Okay. So therefore, that Lashon Hara, on the other hand, is where I only look at bad things, even where it's not, doesn't affect me. I like to talk about people. You know what I mean? People like to watch soap operas. Why? They like to see, you know? They like to see people talking and they're stabbing each other in the back. They're drawn to a certain evil. You understand? Like it's an evil, like, you know what I mean? Like there's all this gossip. They become involved in other people's lives. That's Lashon Hara. I get involved in other people's lives, and I always look at the negative things in other people's lives. That's Lashon Hara. It's a certain involvement in looking at negativism. Donning Lakavskus, judging a person, means that there are two, that he deserves to be judged innocent, where there is a question. If I know for sure he did the wrong thing, then even a righteous person, I say he did the wrong thing. But it's used based on, I have to make a decision what to do in this situation. Can I trust this person or not? It's a practical thing to make that type of decision, to investigate a person in a practical situation, whether I should trust them or not. So if I don't know the person, then I should not trust them. Okay? If I do know the person, then I have to make an evaluation in the area that I have to trust them. Can I trust them? Or under what circumstances can I trust them? All right, so what we said yesterday was that Choshed B'Ksherim, where I suspect the person that's innocent, it's only where I know for sure that the person is a righteous person, and that and therefore, when there's two logical possibilities, I should work it out that I should say it's highly probable and make a decision and to trust them that it's for the motive was the correct motive. But if it's a person I don't know, then I should base it on human nature. Well, human nature is basically where basically negative and destructive. Okay? That's what we said yesterday. Now the question what we have to deal with today is wherein lies Moshe? Where did Moshe make a mistake? Okay? The question is, why is Moshe considered a person who's choshed b'ksherim, that he suspects innocence? On the contrary, Moshe made a very clear evaluation. Back in Shemos, Pasuk Yud Gimel and Pasuk Yud Dalet, it says that before this it said that Moshe went out, he was raised in Paro's house, and then he went out and he saw an Egyptian beating a Jew, so he killed the Egyptian. The next day he went out and two Jews were fighting, and he said, why are you beating each other up? So they answered back to him, what, are you going to kill us like you killed the Egyptian? So then it says, so Moshe said, therefore it's known. And Rashi says, Rashi has two explanations, and the second explanation in Rashi is therefore it's known to me that these people deserve to be slaves and they don't deserve to be free. So based on that argument, he evaluated the nation of Israel, and he felt, based on his understanding of justice, that they didn't deserve to be set free. You see? So therefore, he said that they will not listen to me, meaning that they do not have the ability to stand up to Paro. And they will not stand up to Paro. In fact, they won't even accept somebody that's willing to help them, you see? So he says that they won't listen to me. He made the evaluation. So since he made the evaluation, he has a right to come to the conclusion, based on what we said, he has the right to come to the conclusion that what? That they don't deserve to become free, and they will not trust me, because he made the evaluation. Okay? So now the question is, why is Rashi saying that God condemned him for choshed b'ksherim, suspecting an innocent person? They really don't deserve to be, they really are, they should be, they're not innocent. Okay? The answer is that back in verse 18, chapter 3, verse 18, God says to Moshe, and they will listen to your voice when you come, and you will come to the elders of Israel, and you and the elders of Israel will go to the king of Egypt. But God said they will listen to you. They'll listen to what you said. You see? So based on what, even though Moshe made an evaluation, God told him that God is telling him that they will accept. God's evaluation is different than Moshe. And here Moshe is arguing with God and not accepting God's argument. You understand? So therefore Moshe should have accepted that. So in that way, he's not accepting God's interpretation of the nation of Israel, but he's accepting his own interpretation, which is that it's for evil. In other words, he's accepting his own interpretation that his understanding and analysis of the nation of Israel they will not listen to him. According to his evaluation, they will not listen to him. Now the question is that when you have to judge Israel, is it only in this case that Moshe was choshed b'ksherim, he suspected the innocent, and because God is telling him that they will listen therefore you should listen? Or is God saying that in general, when it comes to the nation of Israel, even though they it looks like it's bad, you should always look for the evaluation to work it out that they have good motives? In other words, were there two lots? In other words, is the nation of Israel different than the way we investigate any other nation? When we investigate a nation or people, we go by our investigation, right? And if the person is condemned, in other words, if we should look at him as the bad, when there's two logical possibilities, we should always choose the bad, the evil possibility. So therefore, should we do that by Israel, but God is saying in this particular case, it's different? Or is God saying by the nation of Israel, you should always, wherever this the nation of Israel, you have to relate to differently and decide who they are, in the case where you don't know whether they could choose right or wrong, whether their motive would be right or wrong, or which way they're going to operate. So they should always go for innocence. I don't have any proof from here which way it should go, whether it should only go for this particular time or for always. Okay, now the question is, Rashi said that you will be punished with that stick that is in your hand. From this, meaning the stick that is in your hand, you will be punished. Okay? So the question is, where is it that Moshe was punished with the stick? The Midrash says, and another reason for his flight, when he ran from the serpent or the snake, is because he had sinned by his words. He had sinned because he was choshed b'ksherim, right? Had he not sinned, he would not have fled, for not the serpent brings death, but sin brings death. And the Midrash brings a proof. Okay? So the thing is that we see that Moshe, when he ran, in other words, Moshe on the highest level, if he hadn't sinned, would have not been afraid of the snake. The snake couldn't have harmed him because he was a tzaddik and he didn't do anything wrong. The snake could not have harmed him. He's above the laws of nature. You understand? As you develop and reach higher and higher levels, you reach a level where you're above the laws of nature. You see? But when you sin, so then your level comes down. Okay? Now most people, when they sin and they feel God is going to punish them, what they're afraid of is that God is going to take away their money, God is going to shorten their life. They're afraid of punishment in the physical. Moshe, who was way beyond that, where the physical had no meaning to him, but only his relationship to God was the essence. So his punishment is that he's further away, where he would be separated from God. You see, a certain distance from God. Here it shows that there was a distance between his relationship to God. Because had he not sinned, the Midrash says, then he wouldn't have been afraid of the snake, because the snake couldn't harm him. But once he sinned, where he was choshed b'ksherim, where he suspected Israel, he suspected when they should be innocent, he suspected them of that they would do the wrong thing, you see? So then in that case, it was a lower level, and his relationship to God was lowered. So since it was lowered, so then the snake could have harmed him, so he had to run away from the snake. You see? So that was his punishment, that he was further away from God. There can't be that is really the worst type of punishment. But we who don't have the value system, the correct value system, so we think that the punishment is God takes away from the physical. But the real punishment, the ultimate punishment, is where he takes away from the spiritual and lowers us to a lower level of of a relationship to God. And here you see that that's what happened to Moshe. Now before we said in verse 2, that God condemned Moshe for condemning Israel, that they will not. Moshe said that they won't listen to me, and he says he judges them that why are you violated that you should don lekavskos, you should judge where you see people that there are two possibilities. You should always find the correct possibility and not suspect them, bichoshe b'ksherim, and not suspect them of being wrong and doing that they will make an evil decision. Okay? Now in this Rashi says that the reason why God changed it into a snake, because that was a hint. He was hinting at the idea that Moshe was speaking Lashon Hara and it refers to that when Moshe said they will not trust me, Moshe was talking Lashon Hara against the Jews, and he adopted the craft or the trade of the snake. Okay, that's all Rashi says. Right now, the first thing is, so the question is, which one is Moshe violating? Is Moshe violating the Lashon Hara, talking gossip, or is he condemning an innocent person? He's saying that they will not listen to me when the facts say otherwise, that you should listen, that they will listen. Okay? So the question is, what's the difference between the two? And what is the craft of the snake? Or what is the trade of the snake? Okay? That's the question. So Rashi quotes the Medrash. I checked the Medrash, and the Medrash says that it's referring to the snake of Adam and Eve. Okay? Now, back by that story in Bereishis, that's Perek Gimel, Pasuk Hey, that's chapter 3, verse 5, it says that the snake was speaking to the woman, and he says, the snake said to the woman in verse 4 that you will not die, and he gives the reason why God doesn't want them to eat from the fruit of the tree. Because God knows in the day that you eat from it, your eyes will be open, and you'll be like God. You'll know good and evil. In other words, God doesn't want a competitor. So Rashi says, he says that God knows. He says every tradesperson, a person that has a trade, hates the people of his own trade because they're in competition. There's certain competition. So he doesn't like them. So he says, from the tree he ate, God ate from the tree and created the world. And you will be like God. You'll be able to create worlds. Okay? So Rashi says, Rashi and Shemot says, our Rashi says that is the snake that he's hinting at when the stick turned into a snake. Okay? Right. And that represents Lashon Hara. Okay? So what is the difference based on the information that we have? What is the difference between Lashon Hara, gossip, and judging a person, condemning an innocent person? In other words, where you evaluate him that he can't do a certain thing when really he could. And since we have two terms, they must be two different things. So the question is, what is the difference between the two? I think the first thing that we have to do is analyze the Rashi and Bereishis, and what is the Lashon Hara that the snake spoke at that point. The first thing is, in that Rashi we see, you are right, we do see that Rashi spoke, the snake spoke Lashon Hara against God. Okay? Now, what does that mean insofar as Lashon Hara is concerned? The question again is, what is the idea, how would you look at Lashon Hara, how would you define Lashon Hara based on the fact that the snake spoke Lashon Hara against God? In other words, again, the snake said to Chava, God doesn't want you to eat from the tree, because how did God create the world? He ate from the tree, and that's how he created the world. Now, if you'll eat from the tree, you'll also be able to create from the world. So therefore, he doesn't want you to eat from the tree. That's what the snake said to Chava, according to Rashi. According to Rashi, the answer is that Lashon Hara, according to the story of the snake, is where the snake says something that's totally not in line with reality. It's not in line with reality, it's open. That is Lashon Hara, where you say things. In other words, let's say, for instance, you describe how a person dresses. That is not Lashon Hara. When you say, could you imagine how a person could dress that way? That interpretation, you see, is Lashon Hara, you see. And there is only that possibility. There is no other possibility. That is Lashon Hara. You see? That's Lashon Hara. Where you choshed b'ksherim, where you condemn a person who is innocent, that term is used where a person made an evaluation of the situation. He made an evaluation. And since he made an evaluation of the situation, you see, he has both sides, but he feels that one side is stronger than the other. You understand? In other words, like this. That because of, we'll soon see. We'll, like, for instance, in our case, let's take our case. That's the best thing. Moshe made an investigation into the Jews, whether they can make it. He knew, according to their nature, that they couldn't make it. God is saying that no, the Jews are different, and they can make it. You understand? But his evaluation, when he evaluates it, he sees one thing. He sees that they can't make it. You see what I mean? It's an evaluation. Choshed b'ksherim is not just Lashon Hara. It's not Lashon Hara. It's like a subdivision of Lashon Hara, because you're looking at the negative part of him. But it is an evaluation whether the person could make it or not. You see what I mean? Lashon Hara is there's no other possibility except the incorrect view. There is no other possibility except the incorrect view. Okay. It's a very good way of putting it, Marcus. That there's a difference between the truth and the negative view of the truth. And the negative view of the truth could come about in two ways. One, I see only Lashon Hara. I see there's nothing else, that is the way it is. That's what the snake said about God, that this is the way it is. We know from before that Moshe made an evaluation from the case where he saw the two people fighting. He made an evaluation about the Jewish nation and about their personality. There he made an evaluation of what their personality is. You see? So therefore that is, and God is saying, no, that's not true. Your evaluation is wrong. You see? So therefore, I would like to say like this, that Moshe, and the question is, in the same situation, Rashi is saying that he is choshed b'ksherim, that Moses is suspecting an innocent, and he's speaking lashon hara. So since it all can only be one or the other, the question is, which one is it? The answer is like this. Insofar as the Jews are concerned, he made an evaluation, and that evaluation is that they can't make it. That was Choshed B'Ksherim, because that was an evaluation. Insofar as God is concerned, he's talking Lashon Hara. That's what we get from the snake, because the snake was talking Lashon Hara against God, so it's saying Moshe is not accepting where God said they will trust you. Moshe is not accepting that reality, so Moshe is talking Lashon Hara against God. So insofar as the Jews are concerned, it is Choshed B'Ksherim. Insofar as God is concerned, it's Lashon Hara. We are doing verse 6, okay? And it uses the word saras, that is translated as leprosy, which is a false translation. Because leprosy is a physical disease. Saras is a spiritual disease. Saras, we don't get today anymore. We got years ago when we had the Beis HaMikdash, the temple, and the Kohanim, the priest, would decide when you had saras and when not. You did not go to a doctor for a cure for saras. You go to a doctor to deal with leprosy. You went to the Kohen to deal with saras. So it's a separate disease. It's a spiritual disease that specially happened. The only thing I know about it from Torah is that it had a certain color, and the color was white. That's why it says his hand was saras like snow. It had the color of snow. Okay? There's different levels of whiteness. There's different types of whiteness. That's a Gemara that deals with the laws. I mean, it's a Chumash. In the Chumash, it deals with the laws of saras. And over there, it deals with the different types of saras. But it is not leprosy. It is a spiritual disease. We're in chapter 4, verse 6, and we're doing Rashi. In verse 6, in the middle of the Rashi, it says that this sign was another hint we remember we discussed the snake, that the snake represented the snake in the Garden of Eden, and that was that he spoke against God, so Moshe also spoke against God, Lashon Hara. So this was also another sign that he spoke Lashon Hara. And Rashi says, just like Miriam, everybody knows the story of Miriam, that she spoke against Moshe, and she got the punishment of Tsaras. Okay? She got the punishment of Tsaras. So Rashi says, just like Miriam. Question is, why did Rashi bring that in, just like Miriam? I mean, okay, fine. I mean, you know, it's a proof, but could have said something, you know, I don't know why he brought it in. He could have said he got Tsaras because of Lashon Hara. Okay? Why do you have to bring the proof from Miriam? That this is the punishment for Tsaras, and therefore he got the punishment. Okay? That's the question. Okay. There are other Rishonim that don't learn, according to Rashi, these verses. Okay? They learned the verses in a totally different manner. And it was not a condemnation of Moshe, but they have a certain discussion between God and Moshe. It's a totally different approach. Okay? Now, Rashi is learning the Pesukim that Moshe made a mistake. That's the way he's learning the verses, that Rashi made a mistake. Therefore, Rashi has to prove different from the other commentaries. He understood that there are other possibilities of learning, but Rashi is saying that the snake that it turned into a snake and that it turned into ras is a proof for Lashon Hara. Okay? And therefore he has to bring a proof that the punishment for Lashon Hara is saras. Okay? So that you also have to understand another thing, that Rashi holds that these two miracles were also miracles that he had to show the nation of Israel. So the other commentaries learn that the only reason why Moshe had these two miracles, so that he could convince the nation of Israel that he was sent by God. Rashi holds that too, because you see with the rod, he changed it into a snake. You see? And how he dealt with Saras, Rashi deals with Saras that way as he works it out. Okay? But however, he's also saying that the reason why the proof came out in this way is because if you look at the nature of a snake and you look at the nature of Saras, and the snake, we're talking about the snake in the Garden of Eden, so he says, then you see that it's talking about Lashon Hara. So it must be that God was telling Moshe that you didn't speak, that you spoke Lashon Hara, and that you have to do tshuva on it, you have to repent on that. And so therefore, that's why Rashi goes out of his way to prove from Miriam that Saras is a punishment for Lashon Hara, and therefore God is condemning him for Lashon Hara. And he also used this simultaneously, he also used this to prove to the nation of Israel that God sent him. The other commentary learns the pasuk not as a condemnation of Moshe at all, but he learns all the pasukim as simply a clarification of his mission. And he didn't do, Moshe didn't do anything wrong. But Rashi's trying to prove the thesis that Moshe did something wrong. We're doing chapter 4 in Exodus, verse 7. And it says that before this, God said, put your hand into the 6 and 7. 6 and 7. God said, put your hand in your shirt. And it became Saras. Saras is a spiritual disease. And when he brought out his hand, it was Saras. It had that form. It was a certain whiteness, Saras, as the skin changes color, the pigment of the skin changes color. So the thing is, that is Saras. Okay? If you have Saras, you don't go to a doctor, you went to the Kohen. Today we don't have that type of relationship to God, we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, then we don't have the disease of Saras today. Leprosy is the wrong translation. Leprosy, you go to a doctor. If you get leprosy, it's a physical disease, you go to a doctor. Okay? It has absolutely nothing to do with leprosy. That is an incorrect translation. Leprosy is a physical disease. Saras is a change in the pigment of the color of your skin. And it is physical, but the cure, you go to cure it, you went to the Kohen, not to the doctor. The punishment, it's a punishment for speaking Lashon Hara. That's what we already said. It affects you physically, but the cause is a spiritual cause. Yes, Shlomo. Albino is a physical disease. It is not caused by speaking Lashon Hara. You will have to go to a doctor if you want. I don't know if it's curable, but if you don't like being an albino and you want to cure it, then you go to a doctor, not to the Kohen. Okay? The expression of the punishment is in the physical body, but the cause is not physical. The cause is because you spoke Lashon Hara. That's the cause. In other words, when you talk Lashon Hara, God intervenes in the laws of nature and changes the pigment of your skin. And if you want to be cured, then you must go to the Kohen, and through the Kohen will tell you what to do, The Kohen will tell you how to get cured. You do not cure it by a doctor. Now Rashi says that from here we learn that God rushes goodness when there's a reward. God rushes goodness, but however, whenever there's a punishment, you, the reward comes quicker than the punishment. Okay? And he brings the proof, because it says, Meche Ko, from his chest. In other words, when he put it in, so it became impure, first when it got inside his shirt, right? So he should be cured when it gets outside his shirt. But it says, from his shirt, like from inside his shirt, meaning that it was cured before he got it out. So therefore, it was very quick in undoing. That's how Rashi gets his proof from that deduction. From in the first time it says he put it in, but in the second case it says from his shirt, right? From his shirt means that within his shirt, Rashi is saying, it already was cured before he got it out. Okay? So it shows that he rushes it. Okay? I would like to give an example of the slowness of God's punishment, where you see that God is slow to punish. Okay? This example starts in Samuel 1, book 1, chapter 5, starting from the first verse, going into chapter 6, up until including verse 6. Okay? That's the story, okay? Story was, we were at war with the enemy, and the enemy captured the Mishkan. The Mishkan was the ark that we had, the ark they captured, the ark of God. Okay? Now what they did with it was they put it in the same room with their idol called Dagon. And it was Dagon, they say it comes from a fish, but whatever it is, it was their idol. Now this was a degradation to God's ark. It was the Aron is the ark that's inside the Beis HaMikdash. It was one of the holiest objects in the Beis HaMikdash. It was a total degradation. So after they put it in, the next morning they found that it fell on the ground. For no reason, it just fell on the ground. The idol. So they picked up the idol and they left. The next morning they came back, they found that it fell and it smashed. Okay? So they started wondering. But they still didn't return the ark. So they got, the whole community got hemorrhoids. Okay? Okay? Then it says when they sent it back, when they realized that it was wrong, they sent 6 golden hemorrhoids. They made hemorrhoids into gold. I mean, they made gold into the form of hemorrhoids. And they also sent 6 golden mice. So the Radak implies why they send the mice. The hemorrhoids, I understand, this was saying that we're sorry, God, we made a mistake, and we're sending gold to you, and to show that we made the mistake from the punishment, that we realize it's a punishment from you, it's in the form of hemorrhoids. But no place in the pasuk does it say mice. So the Radak says that the hemorrhoids, when it's a lot of bleeding, it brought the mice was drawn to it, said I had a plague of mice as a result of that. Now the reason why they don't mention that in the Torah, the reason why they don't mention the mice in the Torah, is because the mice was a result of the laws of nature. The first 3 was God doing the act. God intervened in the laws of nature. So the first thing, he made it fall for no reason. There was no physical cause. Then he made it fall and smash. Then the third thing, he caused the hemorrhoids. as a result of that, within the laws of nature, the mice came. So the pasuk doesn't mention the mice. We only know the mice because when they sent back the gold, so the Radak says, why did they send mice? It must have been that they had an infestation of mice that came because of the hemorrhoids. Okay? So here we see that when God intervenes in the laws of nature to punish a nation or a person, I mean, this is, doesn't work in the laws of nature. The laws of nature might work differently. But when God intervenes in the laws of nature and he punishes, he gives you fair warning that he's intervening. He gave one thing that's out of the laws of nature, two things out of the laws of nature, three things out of the laws of nature, fourth was a punishment as a result of the first three within the laws of nature. You know, start getting a, you better start working it out. You understand? I'm giving you a chance to work it out. And they did. They sent the ark back. Okay? You also find a similar thing. And by the way, the Rabbah points this out by this story. The Rabbah points this out very clearly. Okay? But the Rabbah also mentions that the same thing was when God dealt with Egypt. The earlier plagues were very simple and affected them very little. Each plague became a little stronger to make them aware that this is out of laws of nature. You better start dealing with it. Paro did not deal with it, so therefore at the end he was totally destroyed. But however, the thing is that God gives you fair warning to be able to deal with it. That is the slow punishment. When you see by Klal Yisrael, the nation had to be redeemed at a certain point in history. When that point came, immediately, they were rushed out of Egypt, that they didn't even have time to let the dough rise so they could have bread. That's why it became matzah. Okay? So the thing is, that rushing shows that when the time for God to take away the punishment and to give you the reward that you deserve at that point, then it's rushed. Then it's immediate. You see? It's immediate. So therefore, that is what Rashi is pointing out here. The same thing with the hand became tsaras as it went in, but before it even came out, it was already cured. Because the cure comes faster than the punishment. And I'm just giving you an example so that you could see why the punishment is slow, because it's constantly warnings, and why, but once the punishment is over, you must get your exact punishment and not one slight iota more than what God felt you deserve. More than that, you should not get. At that point, you must go free. This is the rule of how God relates. This is one of the methods of one of the aspects of how God relates to us when it's Hashgacha Pratis, God's personal supervision. And that's what we see, that's what we learn from Rashi. And from the other examples. In other words, God is very precise insofar as justice is concerned. But however, before he punishes you, even though you deserve the punishment now, he will not give you the punishment now. He will give you fair warning. Where he's intervening in the laws of nature. Okay? He will give you fair warning even though you deserve it now. But when it comes to where you received your payment, where you received your punishment, or where you did something good and you deserve a reward, there it's not a slow process. The justice demands that you get it immediately. And so therefore God does it immediately. But the other thing needs warning before. We're doing chapter 4, verse 8 and 9, and we're going to do the Rashi in 8. In the pasuk, in the verses, there is an interesting problem. God says first, if they don't trust you on the first sign, then they'll believe you on the second sign. Then in verse 9 says, and if they don't believe you in the second sign, then they will believe you. It doesn't say they will believe you. Then you should take from the waters of the river, and you should spill it on the dry land. What's the matter? God that can't make them, doesn't know. Says if they're going to listen, then they should listen to the first sign. They don't listen to the first sign, they surely listen to the second sign. But if they don't, I mean, that's a strange way. A human being might talk that way. A human being will say, well, it's highly probable that they will trust you the first time. They don't trust you the first time, they will trust you the second time. They don't trust you the second time, try the third. Okay? But we're talking about God. God is talking to Moshe, and he's talking about Moshe's mission, that, well, either they're going to trust him on the first and or not. Because you're prophesying to Moshe. God is prophesying to Moshe. So he knows what's going to happen. So it's a funny way of expressing, for God to express himself. And Rashi brings a proof for the second one. If you're going to have, you're going to tell them about that you had tzaras, a spiritual disease, that they'll trust already. Why will they trust? Because they know the facts that Paro and Abimelech were punished with tzaras because of sorrow. So they know that that's a way that God punishes. They know that's a method that God punishes. So therefore, if that's a method that God punishes, so they'll trust you on that. Well, if Moshe knows that that's the history also, just like them, why should they trust him if he's lying? He might be lying. They don't know if he's telling the truth or not. So on what basis are they trusting him? So the first question is, what is God talking about? And the second question, what is Rashi talking about explaining why they should trust Moshe on the second message of the that he was struck with tzaras? Why should they trust him on that? You see, because if they know the history, he knows the history. And if he knows the history, he could be lying. And it never really happened. Again, this is a clarification. Just going over the second question. Second question is, Rashi says that they'll trust you on the second sign. The second sign was that his hand became tzaras. Okay? Says they'll trust you on that. Why? Because they know from history that God punishes with tzaras. How do they know from history? Because when Avram went down with Sarah, one time to Paro, one time with Abimelech, they were struck with tzaras. So you see that that's a punishment that God gives. So therefore, God, according to Rashi, God is telling Moshe that they'll trust you on the second one because they know the historical event. But then if they know the historical event, they could say, Moshe, you also know the historical event, and God never made the answer us. The whole thing is a lie. God never made the answer us. So because God never punished you, you're only telling that because everybody knows the history. According to Rashi, he did not do the act because it says, and definitely according to the Sifsei Chacham says openly, that since Rashi holds that it's a punishment, Moshe doesn't deserve the punishment twice. And the pasuk says, if they don't listen to the voice, in other words, what do you mean the voice? She says they don't listen to follow the sign. The voice means that you should tell them what happened. And the third thing, when it comes to the waters, it doesn't say, it says if they don't listen to your voice, about the second thing, then this is what you should do. You should take the waters. It doesn't say voice anymore. So according to the Sifsei Chachamim, Moshe is only telling them the first two, but not showing them the first two. The third, they're actually showing. The answer to the first question, if I tell you something that rationally makes sense, okay, even though I could be making it up, is different than if I tell you something that's absolutely crazy. You understand? there's a difference. In other words, if I tell you that, some crazy thing, so then, you'd have to have more proof than just me telling you. Or either you have to know me as a Navi, or you have to know me personally. Moshe is first coming. This is his first mission to Israel. They don't know him. He's proving himself with this. Now, if Moshe is saying something intelligent, they might not trust it, but at least they know it's not stupid. You see? That's why the Pasuk says that if they don't trust, meaning they will trust to a certain extent, but it won't be completely. That's what I believe the verse is saying. It's not that God is saying that it's a total non-trust. It says, if they don't listen to the first one about the snake, well, that you don't have any proof for, that I can understand they might not listen to altogether. But the second one they have a proof for, so there's a certain level of acceptance that God does things this way, but they still have a question. It won't be a total thing. The third step is that you'll make a physical miracle. That they have to trust. That they'll see. They'll see the miracle. So they'll know it's true. You see? So God is saying that the first one you tell them, that they might not trust. He doesn't say, right? But they might. You could explain how the snake represents evil. Okay, fine. But if they don't accept that, the second one is based on information that they themselves have. So he says, if they don't trust, because first he said they will trust the second one. But they said if they don't trust the second one, what God is saying, they will trust it already to a certain level, because that they know. But there still will be something missing. So when he said, they will trust you on the second, but then if they don't trust you, means it's not a complete trust, you see? So then they'll trust you on the third. You see? And Rashi is explaining why they will trust you on the second. Rashi is explaining because they have historical proof of that. What I'm asking the question about, that he could be lying too, that is the part that they distrusted him on. You see? So therefore, there's a certain trust, there's a certain distrust. But if it was totally, they never heard of such a thing, then they just wouldn't trust them at all. So therefore, there's a certain trust, but not a complete trust. It says, but on the third one, that you'll have them. That's 100% trust. That's the explanation of all our questions on Chumash and Rashi. The question that's being asked is, Moshe is coming, according to Rashi's understanding of what's happening here, Moshe is coming to tell the people that I was punished by God because I spoke Lashon Hara about you. Now that does not engender a feeling of being drawn to this leader. I mean, that's not the way to introduce yourself to the public. In other words, to get the public to follow you, that is not the exact process of which a person should introduce himself to give them security to follow this person. So the question is, according to Rashi, what is Moshe doing here? I mean, he's putting himself in a weak position to be able to win over the people. That sounds very strange. It could be that because of the nature of his mission, when we come. In Judaism, when a leader comes to the public, he comes to the public with truth and honesty and through discussion. Okay? Not just by making himself big, but he tries to win over the people via the truth. You see? And not via his greatness. When a leader of the Jews come to the public, he doesn't come by virtue of his greatness, but he comes by virtue of the truth, and he will prove the truth either through argument, or he'll prove the truth because God will say, I'll perform miracles to help prove it, the truth. But however, it's via the truth, not by virtue of the personality of the leader. In all countries, the leader's personality is what controls the public. Over here, Moshe's mission was to bring the nation to receive Torah. He had to relate to the public, to the nation, through truth itself. And even though he had to come to them and show his own weakness, if that is the way to show the truth, then that's the way he has to approach the nation. Not by virtue of his personality, but by virtue of the truth. We're doing verse 9, the first Rashi in verse 9. Okay? And it says, Rashi says, that God hinted with the, that God hinted, approached the purpose of the first Makkah, the first plague, was to punish their gods. And then there's an old Rashi from an old manuscript where it's a little more expressed there, that God always pays by the nations, by the God, by all the nations. When he punishes the nations, he always starts with their God, which then in this case they served the Nile that gave them life. It was the cause of life. And he turned it into blood. So when the beginning of the punishment starts with the God, with their God, and then he punishes them physically. But first he starts with their God. Our question is, what is the benefit or what is the purpose of starting with the God? Right. There are two possibilities. One is that that's their security. He wants to take away their security. Or two, he wants to educate them that their God, since their whole view of life stems from the basic philosophy of their religion, and therefore I must attack the basic foundation of their religion, the basic foundation of their incorrect view of life. So the question is God attacking them to give them insecurities, as a punishment, or as a means of helping Klal Yisrael, Israel, or is it a means of education of everybody, the Egyptians and the Jews alike? Whenever you are disagreeing, whenever there's a disagreement with two people, you must always, many times both people could be logical, but the big problem is the premises. Where you start out. What's my premise of life? You see? And that's where you have to argue with the person. What Rashi is saying is that when God educates the nations, or he's educating Israel, whichever the purpose is, everybody could learn from it, that he educates them on the basic premise. If your basic premise is a God, then God, by God he means that which you hold is the basis of everything in your life. Like for instance, let's say for instance, you hold the basis of everything in your life as your weapons. You don't have any God, but your total security and your total philosophy of life is your weapons. So then the way God would destroy you, he would start with your weapons. He would start with the weapons and destroy. If it's a god, so then he has to destroy the god. He attacks the god. In other words, God doesn't destroy a person completely altogether. That was, we learned another time, that God takes things step by step. But when step by step as a warning, he always starts with the basic premise of that society. He takes away that which they built up their whole philosophy on, and God shows them that that philosophy is incorrect. So it's an education. What Rashi is saying is that the plagues, or when God causes harm through his miracles in any nation, not only this, he always starts with the basic premise. If you still don't get the picture when your basic premise is broken, then he starts working towards the particulars, and he keeps going further and further until either you get the lesson or he'll destroy you, like Egypt. It's not, in other words, there's two ways of looking at the way God punishes you. He punishes you little by little, so you can look at it as that God is causing me to suffer because why didn't he just get it over with already? That is true. Some people do that. But when God does it, God is not out to torment you. That's an incorrect view of God. When you recognize how God relates to us, it's always trying to educate the wicked, to try to get them to see the truth and change their view. You see? But however, our emotions see it incorrectly. So yeah, you might see it that way. A power will look at it another way. Each according to their emotions will look at it incorrectly. But what God is trying to do, if you allow your mind to work and to see the truth, then you would see that God is trying to educate you to the truth, and then you'd be able to repent, and God would take away the punishments. All right, we're in chapter 4. We're still in verse 9, the second Rashi. It starts, "For all you amayim in the water was." Rashi says that it says Vahayu two times. You look back in the Pasuk, it says, and it will be the waters, Vahayu, it will be the waters that you take from the river. And then it says Vahayu again, it'll be to blood in the dry land. Okay? So it says Vahayu twice in the verse. The question is, why did it have to say it twice? It could have said that it will be in the water that you take from the river to blood in dry land. Why did it have to say Vahayu twice? That's Rashi's question. Okay? We're doing Exodus 4, chapter 4, verse 9. The second Rashi, it says, "Vahayu amayim," and the pasuk says, "In the water that you take from the river, it will be to blood in the dry land." The Rashi says that it says "Vahayu" twice. It was only necessary. "Vahayu" means "and it will be," and Rashi says that it says "Vahayu" twice. That it's not necessary to have the second Vahayu. So he says, what does it mean? He says, I imply from this that not that in his hand, if it only wrote it once, it would mean that the water changed in his hand. Okay? But now that it says Hoyu twice, so we say that the water was in his hand. And then it became to blood on the dry land. Okay? So when it hit the dry land, it was water in his hand. But when it hit the land, that's when it turned to blood. And that is what Rashi said. And the question is, why does Rashi go out of his way to draw this implication? What's the big deal if it changed in his hand or it changed on the ground? What's the big deal? Again, the question is, what's the difference if the water changed in his hand or if the water changed on the dry land? What's the big deal? And one of the commentaries say that the water, if it's changed in his hand, the Egyptians were the greatest magicians. They would be able to do such a trick. But if they see it falling down, it's not in his hand anymore, he cannot cover it up, so then at first when it hit the ground, that's when it changed to blood, they would have to see that this is something beyond just a sleight of hand. Okay? Okay, I'd like to make one observation here. Okay, and that is this. Whenever you get into an argument with a person, about the truth, you must make sure every gap in your argument is filled. If there's one gap in your argument, by gap I mean that there's a step missing or a flaw missing that they could put in something else. In other words, it is possible that Moshe could have changed it through a miracle in his hand. But it's not what, in other words, it's not the reality that's going, in other words, if they could interpret the reality to fit in with their emotions, then they're not going to accept that. So therefore, you must take away every step. You must make sure there is no gap. Because once there's a gap in your argument, it is in that gap that the person that is arguing with you will step in and say, oh, I don't accept this. You have to fill every gap in the argument. If you're working with people that are working with you, so then you can have a discussion and work it out. And even though you don't fill every gap, they'll help you fill the gap because you're working together towards a certain for truth. But if you're arguing with a person that emotionally is close to your view of life, it's going to affect them in a totally contrary to his lifestyle, so then he's going to try to get out of it in every possible way. So therefore, when you give a proof, the proof must be in such a way that he has to deny. The only way he can get out of it is by absolutely denying a total reality. I mean, then you can't argue. I mean, there's nothing more you could do. The guy's going to totally deny reality. There's nothing more you could do. But the best that you, and you see in this case, it didn't help anyway. But the thing is, the best that you could do is to show, to make sure every step is there and there's no gaps in your argument. By a gap, I mean a step missing or a flaw, that an opening that they could say, that's what we hold. In other words, I'd like to explain why this works. A person has emotions to live a certain lifestyle. Simultaneously, he has a sense of reality. Every human being, except the psychotic, every human being has a certain sense of reality. If you can reach that sense of reality, that sense of reality can overcome the emotional desire to live his own lifestyle. But sometimes he can't. Okay? So then he can deny anything. A person can deny his five senses, his emotions, cause him in certain cases to deny his five senses. Then you can't win the argument. Then you can't get to the guy. But the only way to get to a person is through a sense of reality. So therefore, the only way to get to a sense of reality and to overcome the emotion, because the emotion is going to look for gaps in the argument, so you must make sure there is no gap in the argument, that his sense of reality could sneak through. So you're trying to make sure that there's no way that his sense of reality is any way could get out of it, that the sense of reality could attach to a gap in the argument. But if he, so then through a sense of reality, you could win a person over. But however, if that doesn't help, then the guy, you can't help it. The emotion is so powerful that it doesn't allow a sense of reality to work. That's it. There's nothing more you could do. That's as far as you could go. In other words, a psychotic means that his sense of reality doesn't even attach to his five senses. He'll look at a tree, and the tree is out to get him and kill him. You see? He's not living in a world of reality. What we're saying is that a person's sense of reality might attach to his five senses, but then the emotion could close off. The emotion could close off where his logic, where he has to depend on his logic. So he won't be psychotic in the regular sense psychotic, but in a certain sense, in a different framework, he's psychotic in the sense that he doesn't allow his rationale to operate, his mind operate, but he's not psychotic insofar as the five senses is concerned. The usual person that we call psychotic is where his five senses is not in reality. In other words, the regular psychotic is where his five senses is not in reality. We're extending that where his five senses are in reality, but I can only show him logically through the mind that a thing is real, and there he closes it off, even if you fill in every gap. Then you can't help the guy. You can't help him. You can only help him is through his sense of reality he can overcome his psychological desire, so therefore the sense of reality will take him out of, show him the way towards the truth.